July 29, 1994. This interview is conducted with Mrs. Kathleen Sargent Wheeler and conducted by Shauna McLarnon for the Yukon Archives. I was wondering, Mrs. Wheeler, if you could start by telling us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I was 21 years old when I came into the Yukon in 1925 to teach a class of grade 1 and grade 2 students in the Dawson schools. And I ended by marrying the local manager of the Bank of Commerce and staying for the remainder of 9 years before we were transferred to Nelson. What else can I tell you?
Where you came from, perhaps?
Well, I grew up on the prairies. It took my school days in Lethbridge, Alberta, went east to a finishing school, as they called it in those days, and then to normal school before I came into the Yukon to teach.
And where did you go to from here after you left?
My husband was transferred to Nelson for 2 years and then down to the head office in Vancouver. And he was at the head office when he died in 1956.
So it was 1934 that you left?
Yes.
Okay. And how did you come to arrive in the Yukon?
My high school teacher in Lethbridge was made superintendent of schools in the Yukon, and there was a vacancy in the primary department, and he offered it to me, and I accepted it with alacrity.
You came up right away. I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit about the role you fulfilled as a teacher at the Dawson Public School.
Well, that's difficult. I should have quite a little while to think about that. I don't know what role I occupied, but my students all seem to have nice memories of me, and that is the main thing.
Was it a full day of school?
Oh, yes.
From 9
from
o'clock?
From 9 until 3.
Until 3?
Yes.
And you taught grade 1 and 2. It was within the same classroom?
Yes.
And approximately how many students were there?
My regular classroom, after things had settled down and the last boat had left, was 35. But that wasn't my biggest problem. The size of my class was not my biggest problem. It was the fact that there was an Anglican hostel for children who had Indian mothers and white fathers living out in the wilderness. And they were sent in to the hostel to live and to get their education. And I had several children who ranged from 12 to 15 years of age, and it was their first school experience. And I had to amalgamate those with little 6 years old who were also there on their first experience, and it was very difficult.
I can imagine. So as a grade 1 and 2 teacher, did you teach all of the subjects to them?
Oh, yes.
And what were the subjects? Did they consist of?
Well, the 3 R's mostly. And a lot of music. I didn't teach it as music, but as songs and singing.
Were most of the classrooms in the Dawson Public School multi-grade classrooms?
The elementary school was, not the high schools. The high school was upstairs, and I had very little to do with that. But the elementary schools were 3 rooms, and they were multi-classrooms.
At the higher grade level, would you have any idea of what courses they were required to take in the high school, say, for example?
In those days, the university demanded classics as a prerequisite to quite a number of the courses that they offered, and the high school didn't offer Latin or Greek. So when I came in there, I was surprised to hear students say, I went to Mr. Tompkins to see how I could manage to get my Latin courses that I needed. And he said, well, go and see Burton, he'll help you through. That was Pierre Burton's father. Or go and see Burton, he'll teach you Greek. Or go and see Burton and he'll teach you shorthand and typewriting. He was a most amazing man, highly educated and interested in helping along these younger people.
So did the students have an option to seek out help within the community as well if the courses not offering what they needed?
Yeah.
I see. Now, I was reading a text the other day, and I was noticing that the two major changes that occurred in the operation of the Yukon schools both occurred around the same time in which you lived in Dawson City. One was the introduction of standardized tests in 1926, and the other was the adoption of the British Columbia Program of Studies in 1934. And I was wondering...
I wasn't teaching by that time.
Right. Okay. What I was wondering if you might comment on what kind of effect, if any effect at all, either immediate or long-term, did such moves have on the quality of education offered at the Dawson School?
Well, I think that the introduction of IQ tests did a great deal. It showed up several little students who had rather dragged their feet along the way, and their IQ showed them to be way up in the very gifted bracket. And I'm not sure that we ever would have discovered that if it hadn't been for the IQ tests. And on the contrary, it also turned up some IQs that were way below normal, and they adjusted the courses so that those children had special attention.
Did the introduction of standardized tests at all align UConn teaching priorities with those of British Columbia, for example?
I don't know. We were connected with the Ontario course of studies in those days, so I'm afraid I couldn't answer that question.
Okay. So it was Ontario at the elementary level and Alberta at the senior school level.
Well, that came later. When I was there, they were taking their matrics in the Ontario level.
At the high school at the Ontario level, and was it the Alberta level for the junior grades?
Well, British Columbia.
British Columbia.
The course of study was made up by them.
Okay, and in 1934, all of them became okay. in the text, A Century of Schooling Education in the Yukon, 1861 to 1961, it states that in 1927 there were 103 pupils with only four teachers at the Dawson School. Was there a high teacher turnover in Dawson in general?
1927, I was married. I'm not responsible for that year.
Did you notice that when you were teaching there that teachers came and left for different reasons at a high rate, a fast
no,
rate,
I
or
didn't
slow?
I think they had. Not in my experience, not in those 2 years. I think there were two vacancies and two replacements.
And what were the names of the other teachers at the time that you were teaching in Dawson?
Miss McNabb was teaching the grade 7, grade 8. And Miss King was teaching the grade 3, grade 4. I've forgotten who was teaching 5 and 6. Well, there were only three teachers in the elementary school, so they must have been teaching more than two classes. Miss McNabb must have been teaching 6, 7, and 8, and Miss King must have been teaching 4, 5, and 6, or three, four, and five.
Mm-hmm. And the superintendent at that time was?
Mr. Tompkins.
Was he teaching courses himself at that time?
He was teaching classics in the high school.
And was he the only teacher at the high school level?
No. I can't remember the names. There were two other women teachers at that point.
And at that time, what did your students refer to you as?
Oh, Miss Ball.
Miss Ball.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
And I didn't wear jeans, and I didn't wear t-shirts. That was the big change that I saw in the next 10 years when I came outside. Children called their teachers by their first names, and the teachers came not carefully dressed, casually, and they thought that was the best thing.
Children called their teachers by their first name? Wow. That's new to me.
Yeah.
Was that in Dawson in particular, or
well,
was it elsewhere?
Vancouver.
Vancouver.
Yes.
Well, these changes always take a time to get up here, don't they? at the time that you were teaching, I heard that there was a clergyman that would once in a while, on a part-time, occasional basis, volunteer his services.
In the school?
In the school.
What year would that be?
This would be just the early 1930s.
No, I don't remember. I was gone. I had to leave in 1927. That's no right. teacher ever taught after she was married.
That's right. So you got married and then you left the teaching?
I left the teaching, but lived on in Dawson.
And was there enough time to fill your position?
Oh, yes. I resigned early in the spring of the time I was married. Married in the summertime, and that fall there was a new teacher in.
So this, you hadn't heard of this clergyman?
No, I didn't know of any clergyman helping with the teaching. What? There was a Mr. Fleming, but that's the only possibility. If there was any teaching done, it would have been done by him.
Mr. Fleming was a clergyman?
Yes.
Himself? Mm-hmm. And was he with St. Mary's, or was he with?
St. Paul's.
St. Paul's, so that's the Anglican church, yes. What eventually did happen to St. Mary's in Dawson City? I mean, around the time that you were there, what was the state of St. Mary's?
That's the Catholic Church.
The Catholic Church and school.
Well, they had their own good school and was taught by sisters. And they offered a more sophisticated class in music than we did. But otherwise, they followed the same course of study.
Did they have just elementary schooling, or did it go for the
No,
it
had, they came to the public school for the high school.
And I understand that they used to assist in the education of students that were on the BC curriculum but were taking courses through correspondence.
Oh, I didn't know that. That never came to my attention.
So that's okay. I was just wondering basically what the state of St. Mary's was in comparison to the Dawson Public School. Mm-hmm. Did you notice at all if there was a high absentee rate of students at the time that you were teaching?
No, there was no absentee trouble unless the weather got very cold. After 40 below, they wouldn't bring students in from the creeks. There were school buses running, picking children up out in the creeks and bringing them into school, and they wouldn't do that at 40 below. That was cancelled.
And school would be cancelled altogether?
Yes.
Did that mean that there was a prolonged school year?
Once while I was there, there was one for about 10 days we had no school.
Would that mean that the 10 days that were missed in school would be made up for after June?
No, the teacher was responsible for catching them up.
So it was the standard school year from June to the from the beginning of September to the end of June?
Yes.
It didn't begin in August?
It did. We taught 1 week, the last week in August. I forgot just what date it was that we started. Somewhere around the 22nd or 23rd.
And
ran until about the 26th or 27th of June.
Was there any other hindrances that might have happened to keep the school full? Like, say, for example, was there a high dropout rate at all? I mean, I guess you wouldn't have seen that in grade one and two, but... And what about illness? Was there quite a few
influenza? There was no illness at all, because we were so isolated, the germs never got that far. There was never a case of measles or chicken pox or...
Influenza?
No, not even influenza. No, we didn't get heavy colds and things, no.
The it's just the weather.
Health rate was remarkable.
Mostly just the weather,
yeah.
Then. Okay. The other, once upon a time in Dawson, around the turn of the century, or even right up until 1910, there were schools, different schools posted on the different creeks, and I was wondering if any of those schools still existed at the time that you were teaching in Dawson.
No, I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
But I can imagine with a big population, there would be bound to be children out there with the parents.
But you mentioned earlier that some of the children from the creeks took buses into school?
School buses picked them all up along the way. They picked them up on the main road, and the parents were responsible if they were further away getting them to the school buses that passed.
And would that be like Hunker Creek and places
yes.
like that?
Mm-hmm.
And Gold Bottom?
Yes.
Okay.
And they always had to have a very responsible person. A snowstorm could come up, and they have things to contend with that would need an intelligent adult along I would have worried about my children in those cold days.
I was wondering if you'd like to talk a little bit about what life was like in Dawson back then, the social life and the career opportunities, or exactly anything you wanted to be talking about life in Dawson, some of your recollections.
The social life was very nice when I went, and I have very fond memories of the fun that we had. There were big dances, and the women all had new dresses for them. The clothes were very important, and they managed to get them. We would get a lot of our clothes through Eaton's, not the catalog, but through the shopping service. And I was always amazed how suitable her choices were. And the dances had, we had a local orchestra that gave lovely dance music. And everybody at Dawson did wonderful things to make themselves enjoy themselves through a long winter of isolation. We played bridge, we had wonderful dinner parties, and there was no deli to help the hostess out. She'd have 6 and 7 courses from nuts and to the end of her, all hand done by herself. And bridge parties, we played bridge, and we really had a nice time. And you were so close and met the other people so often and so closely that you really had good friends.
How many people lived in Dawson at the time?
About 800 when I was there.
About 800. And how many, 107 students around there? 103 students in the school?
I never figured that out. I'm not sure. I only was really interested in the elementary part of it. But I think there would be, because there were 3 classes upstairs, that would be about the same. And I had 35. That was average. 3 at 35. That's a little over 100 downstairs. And there must have been, probably 50 students above upstairs when I went in.
Wow. And some of the students you taught, you can recall their names?
And oh, yes. I had a very highly intelligent class. Looking back on it, I was most fortunate. I had a little girl by the name of Frances Chambers, and she had made top grades all the way through. Pierre Burton was outstanding even in those days. Alec McCarter took his degree in sciences and is just recently retired. Who else? There were two little boys who lived at the hostel, the Van Bibber boys, and they tell me that in the business world they've been very successful.
Van Bibber. That's a popular name around the Yukon?
Well, it was a Dutch name, and there were a lot of Van Bibbers in the wilderness. The father was ambitious. He had a large family and very ambitious for them. They all came in and had their schooling.
And you were mentioning earlier earlier today about the dances that were held in the Arctic Brotherhood Hall.
Oh, yes.
Was the Arctic Brotherhood still an organization?
No, that was all finished, but the hall still stood, and it had a very large, beautiful hardwood floor that had been suitable for the days when there was a 4,000 population, and here there were only the remnants of the 800 people would attend it. So it was very roomy. We all had lots of room, and there was a couple of people in the Mounted Police who played the piano and the violin, who were very musical and offered their services. Our dances were a great pleasure.
And they were sponsored usually by?
By special occasions, Halloween dance.
St. Andrew's Ball.
Right. The big one of the year was the New Year's Eve Ball, and it was a fancy dress affair. And all the mothers wanted their little children, and me too. But after I had my little girl, after I was married, I always had a nice costume for her. And they'd promenade around there, and the judges would judge them. And the costumes were just superlative, yes.
And have you been back to Dawson to see what became of the Arctic Brotherhood Hall?
No, but I'm going to see when I go now next week.
Was it at all referred to as the Eagles?
No, that was another hall, much smaller, but equally nice in a small way. The Eagles Hall was lovely.
And have you heard of Dime a Tooth Gertie's?
Oh yes, she was prominent even then.
And was that, is this the same Arctic Brotherhood Hall that we're speaking of? This, there's well, Dime a Tooth Gertie's is a gambling hall now.
Oh yes.
And I believe it's in the old Arctic Brotherhood.
Was it really? No, I didn't realize that.
So it'll be interesting for you to check out when you get to Dawson City.
We had a curling rink, a great deal of our spare time, relaxing time was spent in the curling. Everybody curled, young and old and rich and poor and man and woman alike. We had a lovely time in the curling. And the children started down, they'd come to the Arctic Brotherhood with their parents and would be put to sleep on the benches when it got to be 9 o'clock, that they were put to bed and then they expected to. But in the meantime, they were dancing and their fathers were teaching them. And they were dancing with older brothers. They were a band of beautiful little dancers by the time they were 6 years old.
And the Yukon Order of Pioneers, were they active when you were in Dawson?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about what they did?
Well, I remember them principally for the big parade that they had on the 17th of August. That would be their day.
Discovery Day.
Well, it celebrated the discovery of gold, and that's what the pioneers were all in for, you know, for the gold. And by the time I got there in 1925, the men who were in the parade were men who had been 20 at the turn of the century, so they were middle-aged men. Before I left, they were thinning out badly, and their children were stepping in and taking their places.
In the organization?
Yes.
In the...
And in the parade, principally, that was what I knew them for.
Does anything else stick out in your mind about the parade in particular, or that day in particular, the festivities that surrounded it?
Well, it was a big day, as I say. It was a sports day outside for the children, early in the day. And they had all kinds of races, sack races and peanut races and boiled egg races, and they had a lovely time. And then the mothers had competitions for their cakes and their pies and their berry jellies and their jams and so forth. And when that was all over, everybody went home and got dressed for the big dance at night. The big dance of the summer was the 17th of August. Most of them, women, seemed to have new dresses for that occasion.
Sounded like there was a lot of new dresses in Dawson at various times of the year. Were there any other social or charitable organizations that come to mind that were played a prominent role in Dawson City?
We had the hospital there, St. Mary's Hospital, and a number of the women chose that as their charitable work and would go down and mend the sheets and darn the towels and generally keep up the linens of the hospital. We met once a week down at the hospital to do that.
That's very nice of you. and regarding Dawson society, back at the turn of the century when Laura Burton wrote I Married the Klondike, she was mentioning the social
hierarchy.
She
didn't write that early. Her book was on the days of the turn of the century,
yeah.
But she didn't write that until the 1930s.
But when she was reflecting on that period,
yes.
She spoke about the place of the Dawson City teacher in Dawson City social strata, and she was saying how they were actually considered part of the elite that would go to these cocktail parties at the commissioner's house.
Oh, that's
and whatnot.
True, that's true.
And
yes.
Was it a very close-knit society as she was, like, was it still in the late 1920s a close-knit society, social society, like it was in her recollection?
It was, and it encompassed a whole larger section of the community than I had been used to. And it was interesting. They had these bridge parties, often two teas in one day. Once the summer came and the Judge and Mrs. McCauley came in and Mr. and Mrs. George Black came in, the summer activities went fast and you were going to tea parties or dinner parties all the time. And my husband was about 14 years older than I was, and we found ourselves going together, and he was my partner. And I found myself in a middle-aged group of people, much older than I was.
Are you doing well? You need a break?
No, I...
Just for the sake of formality, I was wondering if it's possible for us to acquire permission to not only have this recorded interview available to the public here at the archives, but to deposit the tape in the archives for reference.
It's quite all right.
Okay. That's wonderful.
I hope I haven't made any mistakes.
Oh, no, history is not a mistake.
I'm not entirely sure of all my answers in regard to the course of studies at that time. You may be right that it was Alberta and not BC. I don't...
But the basic gist is the same.
Yes.
Yeah, it's... I'm pleased
that you
could
take it. I don't think there'll be anybody who read that who would pick that up as a mistake. If it is a mistake, I hope it isn't. But it just is vague in my memory, that one piece.
Well, I'd like to thank you for your time and thank you for coming out.
I enjoyed it.
Pleasure having you here.
I found myself very popular here. It was very nice indeed.
I'll just stop. This interview was conducted July 29th, 1994, between Shauna McLarnon for the Yukon Archives and Kathleen Sargent Wheeler, then Kathleen Ball. Kathleen Sargent Wheeler was a former school teacher in Dawson City and lived there from 1925 to 1934.